We all know what that music means. It's time for the Olympics in Paris.
I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast. Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You may know Jackson Pollock, the painter famous for his iconic drip paintings. But what do you know about his wife, artist Lee Krasner? On Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock, the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting. Just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
My kids like this podcast so much. It helps them focus at school, and they learn so much from it.
I am a kid, and me and my little brother listen to it every night before bed.
I love Lingo Kids!
Yeah!
Yes, I'm 8 years old, and I don't care. I still love it.
Parents, our podcast is here to capture imaginations, spark curiosity, inspire new ideas, and even help with bedtime routines. Enjoy it with your kid. Listen to Lingo Kids Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with comedian and actor Alana Glazer about leaving behind her 20s and welcoming the next decade.
I'm being a bad girl now. I'm like, oh my gosh, LOL. And to be a bad girl on a solid foundation, you know, it actually just looks like taking pleasure.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
January 14th, 2009 was an unremarkable day at a daycare center in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Until the afternoon when a daycare provider named Melissa Kalyazinski called out to her coworkers for help. A 16-month-old boy in her care had become unresponsive. 911 was called, CPR was performed, but the infant never regained consciousness. After two autopsies, a forensic pathologist reported a rear skull fracture and massive bleeding that he believed were caused by blunt force head trauma. And after a 14-hour interrogation, Melissa told investigators what they wanted to hear, which sent her away for 31 years. But this is wrongful conviction. Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison, and now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and tell us how these stories make you feel and what you've done to help the cause. Even if it's something as simple as telling a friend or sharing on social media. And you might just hear yourself in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666.
Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction. I don't even know if I'm ready for this one, because this case just hurts my heart. It's an incredible story of a wonderful young woman who has been chewed up and spit out by a system that is, well, unfortunately designed to do just that. And I'm talking about Melissa Kalyazinski. Melissa, thanks for being here. I'm happy you're here, but I'm sorry you're here under these circumstances.
Thank you for having me.
And with Melissa today, Kathleen Zellner. As many of you may know, one of the most accomplished criminal defense appellate attorneys in the country. She's been responsible for dozens of exonerations, including some you've heard about on the show, like Ryan Ferguson. Kathleen, I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you. It's a great opportunity.
This case is one of the more obvious wrongful convictions we've ever seen, and it involves a false confession, junk science, corrupt practices, lying, compromised witnesses, and it goes downhill from there. This is a 31-year sentence of a young woman who was working in, I think what we could all agree is a noble profession, right? Doing daycare. And she was almost certainly, is it fair to say, Kathleen, that she was convicted of a crime that never happened?
Yes, this is not a murder. This is just a complete botched forensic case.
This case is similar to a shaken baby syndrome case in which a child succumbs to various complications that are assigned both a violent cause and an assailant. The most recent caregiver in this case, that's Melissa, who never even got close to being in trouble before this incident, but rather led a quiet life growing up in a loving family in a working class suburb of Chicago.
I grew up in Carpentersville. I mean, it's just your typical suburban neighborhood. My parents' names are Paul and Cheryl. Still live in the same house. I'm the youngest of five. I have two older half-brothers. My middle sister, who's a year older than me, Crystal, me and her kind of did the same thing growing up. She babysat, I babysat. We love children.
Melissa got the chance to work at this daycare center. It was called the Mini Sabee in Lincolnshire, which was a relatively affluent Chicago suburb, right?
I ended up going to the Arlington Heights one for the majority of the time that I worked for Mini Sabee. When I transferred to the one in Lincolnshire, my sister was working there and my nephew was there. He was just a baby. The children made my day. I didn't even care if, like, I had baby puke on me. Yeah, it smelled, but I mean, I still loved what I did.
How this begins is that there was a young child there named Benjamin Kingan. What do we know about the pre-existing conditions that now have come to light?
In October of 2008, Melissa hadn't even started working there. And there was an incident at the daycare center. That incident was totally concealed from the parents. It was not written up. The word was put out by management. Nobody was to really talk about it. They were playing a game, and one of the teacher's aides had a plastic bat and was witnessed swinging the bat, and they were throwing this plastic ball, and she accidentally hit Ben in the back of the head. That manifested itself in a really goose egg-sized lump on his head, but when he was taken to his pediatrician, the mother didn't know the circumstances. She just thought he was a headbanger because he had some stomach problems, so he'd throw himself back on the floor. So the mother had no idea the severity of the blow. So when she took him to a pediatrician, she minimized what happened, and the pediatrician opted not to do a CT scan. But that subdural hematoma, that pre-existing injury, was there all those months and tragically resulted in his death from a subsequent incident where he banged his head.
Pediatricians regularly monitor the height, weight, and head circumference of infants and toddlers. Before this incident in October 2008, both Ben and his twin sister's head circumferences were in the 50th percentile. However, leading up to the day of Ben's tragic passing, Ben's head rapidly expanded into the 95th percentile by January 14th, 2009.
Yeah, so January 14th of 2009, Ben's mother brings him to the daycare center, but he has been at home for 2 days, and he's done some projectile vomiting. He's lethargic, which is a classic sign of a head injury, head trauma. She brings him in because she thinks he's feeling better. And so Melissa noticed that he seemed a little tired, but nothing that really stood out to her.
I mean, it was just a normal, usual day. They were playing most of the day, had snack, then lunch. It was me and Nancy that day, that afternoon, like after nap. So just went to see my sister and my nephew.
Significantly, Melissa leaves the room and is probably gone for 20 minutes. The teacher's aide, Nancy Callinger, who was in the room before Melissa, came back. She said that he'd thrown himself back very forcefully and hit his head on the floor before Melissa came back in the room. When she returns, Ben is in his bouncy chair, and she notices that he's not responding to his name. And then just a minute or so later, she notices kind of an orange-colored foam coming out of his nose and his mouth.
Yeah. When I went over to him, he was just in his chair. I went to go get help immediately when I didn't get a response. So I peeked my head out, left the door open, of course, and my sister came running.
Her sister comes in, another aide. They render CPR. So Melissa is only back in that room for a couple of minutes. And even the state pathologist testified, well, by the time he was unresponsive, this injury had to have occurred 30 minutes before or all the way up to 3 hours. He could not go from being alert and responsive to this almost comatose condition in the amount of time that Melissa was in the room. So then 911 is called.
Of course, we now know that a child can experience potentially up to 72 hours of lucidity after a traumatic event before succumbing to the symptoms that can arise from head trauma. For example, intracranial and retinal bleeding, as well as brain swelling. And who knows what was going on during the 3 days leading up to his tragic passing. But if there was another injury in addition to the one reported by Nancy Callinger, it could have been as innocuous as a short fall that could have caused a re-bleed of his previous head injury and a slow, invisible creep towards unconsciousness.
It was just chaos. We took the kids next door back into the infant room so the paramedics can do what they do. And I was just bawling because it's like, what happened?
He never regains consciousness. They take him in and he's pronounced dead. And then an autopsy is performed by Dr. Choi.
There were two autopsies, right? Which is unusual.
Yes, very. In fact, the cases I've had where there's actually not a murder, there's always two autopsies. So there's the first one where the pathologist decides, well, the cause of death isn't clear, it's undetermined. Then there's police pressure. And then the second one, suddenly there's a homicide. And that's what happened in this case. Choi was pressured.
Yeah, it's like we didn't like the first conclusion. Go get us a different one.
While Dr. Choi was instructed to do a second autopsy, detectives returned to the mini Subi daycare to find Melissa.
I barely got any sleep, but the next morning I went to work. They were all there, and the way they took me out, I had each detective basically standing side by side, super close to me, and then I had one behind me. And I remember Detective Hyde telling me, we need to ask you some more things. And we need you to come with us. But I didn't feel like I had a choice when they were surrounding me.
Melissa was eventually taken to Lincolnshire PD, where she endured 14 hours of interrogation without her parents or an attorney. But importantly, there were other factors at play that made Melissa more vulnerable to police pressure.
I got sexually assaulted back in 2006.
And she had acute post-traumatic stress. Her head was covered with a blanket. So she was like super claustrophobic and had PTSD. That condition was so bad that it showed up years later when I just had Dr. Westfall from Yale, a forensic psychiatrist, do a workup of Melissa. And they reported back to me that she had unresolved PTSD, they were tracing back to the sexual assault. Well, she had reported it, and the perpetrator had some connection to the police department, and there were no charges brought against him.
In addition, subsequent IQ and verbal testing suggests that Melissa's mental acuity also made her more susceptible to pressure from authority figures.
Yeah, she's trapped in the room with these two officers who are incredibly aggressive with her. They've got her wedged into this corner. And the thing I think that's most striking to me in her interrogation that goes on for hours is how many times she denies having done anything.
79, yes. Well, at least 79 that we've counted, right? 79 times she says, no, I didn't do it.
I know I didn't do anything wrong. And it's just so crazy because they keep pressing and pressing. They'll put you in a little room and they'll press and press. Like the world is crushing you and you can't get out of it until you tell them what they want to hear. Because for people like me, there is no right answer. They want their answer.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. I've been a journalist for 2 decades, writing cover stories for Business Week, Fortune, and Wired. And now, every Monday, I bring you conversations with people who are thinking deeply about work and where it fits into our lives. Like Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella on growth mindsets.
The learn-it-all does better than the know-it-all.
Or MacArthur Genius winner Angela Duckworth on talent versus grit.
Your long-term effort and your long-term commitment are surprisingly important.
Each episode delivers pragmatic advice for right now. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Criminalia. I'm Maria Tremurki.
And I'm Holly Fry. Together, we invite you into the dark corridors of history and true crime.
For each season, we explore a new theme. From poisoners to stalkers, art thieves to snake oil salesmen, we uncover the secrets of history's most interesting figures, such as Walter Minks, the man who built his own submarine hoping to escape with his blackmail payout under Lake Michigan. It sounds made up, but it's 100% true.
We'll explore the crimes as well as societal forces at play, from unfair sentencing to jaw-dissolving health risks. And tune in at the end of each episode as we indulge in cocktails and mocktails inspired by each story.
Listen to Criminalia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered.
You can build internal resources. That's what the study of psychology is about, building internal resources.
Turning towards is one of the most important elements of successful relationships, no matter what kind of relationship it is.
The thing that underpins all of this productivity stuff is finding a way to make the journey itself enjoyable. The journey is the destination.
The beauty of uncertainty is infinite possibility. When you don't know what's next, you don't know what's next. And thus, anything can be next.
Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a summer night in Paris, American artist Lee Krasner is drifting off to sleep when the phone rings. On the line, news that her husband, Jackson, is dead. Jackson, as in the painter Jackson Pollock. He might, to this day, be the most mythologized figure in American art. But how much of the story that we've been told about him is just that? A myth. On Death of an Artist, Season 2, Krasner and Pollock, the story about how the art world changed forever. And the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting. Just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
During Melissa's interrogation, Choi is performing the second autopsy, and so the officers keep leaving the interrogation to go and talk to him, and that there's other officers present at the autopsy, which they should actually never do that, because then the pathologist feels extremely pressured.
There were no cuts or obvious wounds or serious bruising, but after the second autopsy, Dr. Choi ruled Ben's death a homicide. He said that there was intracranial bleeding, followed by something that appears to not have been supported by the x-rays, that Ben had a skull fracture from blunt force head trauma.
There's not a fracture that showed up on the clear x-rays, and there was bleeding. Dr. Choi, he can't see that fracture on the x-ray, but he thinks he can see it visually. The whole history of the prior injury that caused this potential for massive bleeding existed in October and was undetected, and then he misses it at autopsy and then gets fixated on what he thought was a skull fracture and that there had to be this tremendous blow to Ben's head. Well, subsequent pathologists have said, no, that's an accessory suture. That's not a skull fracture. There wasn't any tremendous blow to his head.
Accessory skull sutures are developmental anomalies which typically occur while the soft spots of a young child's skull solidify during the first 24 months. So while x-rays are typically a better assessment of fractures or sutures than the naked eye, Dr. Choi chose or was pressured to trust his naked eye instead to assess the source of the intracranial bleeding.
There was fresh blood that had come from the old injury. It's very similar to the football player that has the concussion, then goes back in and is playing and has a slight head tap, and suddenly he's dead. You've got an aggravation of the underlying layers of the brain. In this case, there was subarachnoid, subglial bleeding, but it still wasn't massive bleeding, and there was also old blood. So that's why Dr. Choi, in the first autopsy, it wasn't clear at all that this was a homicide.
There was no reason that a competent person in his position could have or should have made these mistakes. Or again, maybe they weren't mistakes. Maybe he was just kowtowing to the men in blue that were in the room with him, which again, that's outrageous. It's fucking outrageous that they're allowed to like bird dog this situation.
Years later, Dr. Choi admitted that he missed the previous injury during the autopsy, which should have served as a compelling explanation for the bleeding, especially in the absence of any exterior injuries. But the result of this faulty forensic exam was then brought into the interrogation room.
So it's the classic Reed technique where you start out, she's denying. Then you tell her none of that's true. You've just talked to the pathologist. He had this horrible head injury, equivalent to being thrown off a three-story building. She was the one in the room with him when he became unresponsive. It has to be her. And they just keep pounding on her.
They were just like, let's just cut the BS. Let's cut to it. All of us are exhausted. Why don't you just tell us so we can all go home? I just wanted to get home, tell my parents what happened, and go from there. And like, okay, they want to hear what they want to hear. Forget what I'm saying. So that's why I said what I said. Everything they said, I said.
I would say 85% of the interrogation is them talking. They believe that she just snapped and threw him down. They tell her exactly what to say. They show her what to do. Like, here, take this. They gave her some little teddy bear. Throw that down on the floor really hard. He's facing out and she throws him on the floor. The problem is the injuries in the back of the head. But once they got it, they ran with it. And they're couching it in, you haven't done anything really wrong. You'll get to go home. I mean, she actually leaves the interrogation and says, I've got to get home to my puppy and I'm going to warm the car up.
I literally thought I was going home to see my puppy. I had my keys with the pre-starter. I had my phone in my hand. I was literally thought I was going home to see my family and my dog. But it was crazy when they took everything out of my hand.
Neither the false confession nor the autopsy lined up with reality, yet Melissa has not seen the outside since January 15th of 2009.
After everything had happened, I do remember being in the back of a police car and saying, I'm innocent. I did not do this. And I kept telling them there is a big mistake. And they were not listening to me at all. I felt like this tiny little mouse because it's like, I'm telling everybody, like, there's a big mistake. I did not do this. And it was like a nightmare. There is a big mistake.
She immediately recanted her story, but it doesn't matter. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. So
no.
Was she able to bond out, or was she stuck in jail awaiting a trial that was 2 years away?
She never bonded out. She was stuck in jail, and the parents had come to me to do the trial, but I was in the middle of Kevin Fox's appeal from his civil rights verdict. And so I recommended a very accomplished criminal defense attorney, Paul DeLuca, who had been a prosecutor in Cook County, has been a defense attorney for years, has done dozens of death penalty cases and all of that. And then he brought in another attorney who was equally experienced, and they became the trial attorneys. So Paul DeLuca tried to get the confession tossed out, and he brought in Richard Leo, and they did IQ testing, verbal testing, and they did all the right things, and the judge would not let any of that evidence in. Remember, this was in 2011. He said that at that point, the case law was not strong enough to justify letting in a false confession expert. So all that workup was done, her IQ, the problem with the verbal testing. The one thing, though, that they knew about, but they didn't pursue, and Paul's a totally honest person. He's given me an affidavit to this effect, was the sexual assault and unresolved PTSD. Well, Paul DeLuca knew that, but, you know, he was focused on Richard Leo and trying to get all of that in, but they should have done that. They simply did not know that that combined with her language impairments was just fatal to her that day, being in that room in that corner with these people.
So despite the science of false confessions, as well as how susceptible Melissa was to police pressure, her false statement was admitted, and the defense rebuttal evidence and the expert himself, Richard Leo, were denied. Additionally, before her November 2011 trial, Melissa's defense was provided with a digital image of Ben's skull x-ray. But you know how a file can be saved in a different format, which can affect the quality of the content? Well, this image was so compressed that it simply wasn't legible, leaving the defense experts at a big disadvantage. Dr. Shaku Tease testified about both the unreadable images as well as Dr. Choi's shoddy work.
Dr. Choi didn't take samples of the skull fracture. He didn't do the slides that he should have done. So Dr. Tease, she was saying there was no definite proof of the fracture and the x-rays were totally unreadable. And she thought it could have been a suture because Ben was only 16 months old. So his skull was still in that formative, you know, where you have the little soft spot and the skull is more vulnerable. So anyway, T said this could be an accessory suture that's part of the final skull formation and that Choi had just mistaken it for a fracture. Then Paul DeLuca brought in Dr. Leedsma, who's a renowned pediatric physician in Chicago, and he tried to convince the jury this was a rebleed of the prior injury.
The defense also called the other teacher's aide, Nancy Callinger.
She claimed that she'd taken him to the changing table and he didn't need his diaper changed and that she set him down on the floor. And she claimed that and Melissa's not in the room, that he threw himself back really forcefully.
Which directly supports the rebleed theory. Then the state presented an alleged forensic pathologist named Manny Montes, who said that he had felt the fracture with his own hands, which according to the recently resurfaced raw digital images of Ben's skull appears to have been a total fabrication.
Total lies, yes. So what happened was the state sprung Dr. Montes on the defense in rebuttal. And it was very unfortunate they didn't have a counter to Montes, but he gave this Academy Award performance. And his credentials, he was never board certified, but he's the guy that comes in and he's felt the skull and he's manipulated it and tells the jury, oh my God, there's this through and through fracture that was a tremendous blow. So that's the last thing the jury hears.
Prosecutors mentioned the skull fracture more than 30 times. So they knew they had something that couldn't be beat, right? They probably had a meeting in the back room somewhere and said, hey, just keep go after skull fracture, yeah. Skull fracture. Just keep hitting that point.
Right.
And you could they could probably see the reaction in real time. The jurors just probably wanted to throw up thinking about this terribly violent act. So at the end of the day, you've got lay people on the jury. There's competing medical experts. It's almost like a toss-up. And if it's a toss-up, they're going to default to, well, it's easier to reconcile the idea that something horrible was done by a bad person as opposed to the idea that a baby could have just died. Because if that's true, then your baby could just die.
I've done a lot of medical malpractice with parents who've lost a child. I think when parents lose a child, they tend to blame themselves. I think the mother, who may well have had a malpractice suit against the pediatrician who didn't do the CT scan, in her mind, probably blamed herself to some extent, although it was the pediatrician's fault. So as you're saying, one thing that alleviates some of that guilt is to have a clear bad guy, a person you can blame this on, like, this didn't have anything to do with October. This had to do with this young woman and her vile temper.
It was just heartbreaking with me and them how these people lied to them to make it look like something when it isn't. You're putting an innocent person away 31 years. My heart literally went up to my mouth.
Hi, I'm Dani Shapiro, host of the hit podcast, Family Secrets. Imagine this, your parents sign away your childhood to an academic psychological study that tracks you all the way into your young adult life. And how about this? Your middle school kid stumbles onto something he never should have seen or known, something from your secret life. And what about if your sister is very publicly tried, convicted, and sent to prison when really, she was just telling her long-buried truths? These tough questions are just a few that we'll be grappling with on our upcoming 10th season of Family Secrets. With over 34 million downloads and nearly 100 unique stories in our feed, we continue to admire and champion our guests, whose empowering stories of resilience never fail to amaze, enlighten, and inspire. Listen to season 10 of Family Secrets on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Do, do,
do, do, do, do. We all know what that music means. Is somebody getting coronated? No, it's time for the Olympics in Paris.
The opening ceremony for the 2024 Paris Games is coming on July 26th.
Who are these athletes? When are the games they're playing? We may be looking for the sports experts to answer those questions, but we're not that.
Well, what are we? We're two guys. I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast.
You get the two guys, us, to start every podcast. Then the five rings come after.
Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered.
You can build internal resources. That's what the study of psychology is about, building internal resources.
Turning towards is one of the most important elements of successful relationships, no matter what kind of relationship it is.
The thing that underpins all of this productivity stuff is finding a way to make the journey itself enjoyable. The journey is the destination.
The beauty of uncertainty is infinite possibility. When you don't know what's next, you don't know what's next. And thus, anything can be next.
Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a summer night in Paris, American artist Lee Krasner is drifting off to sleep when the phone rings. On the line, news that her husband, Jackson, is dead. Jackson, as in the painter Jackson Pollock. He might, to this day, be the most mythologized figure in American art. But how much of the story that we've been told about him is just that? A myth. On Death of an Artist, Season 2, Krasner and Pollock, the story about how the art world changed forever. And the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting. Just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
When I went to Dubai, it was scary a little bit and it was weird. I was with roommates, with people I did not know. But then eventually the women that I met, they made it easier and we kind of stuck together and they kind of stuck up for me too. It wasn't as bad as what I thought it was because I know that I'm not a troublemaker and I don't cause problems. So by me staying quiet and kind of saying to myself, which I did in the county, I did here as well. So I was cautious at everything I was doing. It made things easier. And I just remember Paul telling me that this is not over. Like, you're not going to do 31 years. It's just a number. Don't stress out about this. And then when they told me that Kathleen, when I got Kathleen Zellner, I just kind of knew, like, I just had to kind of suck it up, my emotions, and set aside to be strong.
So our first involvement is in doing the direct appeal. And we go to the second district, which is very conservative. But we've got no rebuttal to the confession because all of the evidence has been blocked by the trial judge. And Illinois is still contemplating whether false confession experts should be allowed to testify. And the first time that Illinois allows that is in federal court, the Seventh Circuit and a Northern District. So the state courts are lagging behind. So the court just pretty much does a knee-jerk sort of opinion. No, the proof's there beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think we'd already started really reinvestigating, finding out the history of the injury, talking to Dr. Nancy Jones, who was a renowned pathologist. She's now deceased, almost always for the state. And she's the one who thought it was an accessory suture. We got Dr. Choi to recant his testimony. Now, Dr. Choi retired. I'm not even sure if he's still alive, but I had other cases with him, things where he just made mistakes. We approached him and said, my God, there's an underlying injury here that you missed on autopsy. So he agreed, yeah, there was, gave an affidavit, but he was always pressured by the state. They went back and had him modify and say, well, I missed it, but it wasn't important. He just capitulated when pressure was put on him. But anyway, Dr. Rudd then stepped in, discovered the TIFF image. So when Paul DeLuca was representing Melissa, he was given these unreadable JPEG images of the skull. It was practically like a black outline of the head. There's no possible way you could have detected whether there was a fracture there. That's why the state then brought in and sandbagged him with Dr. Montes. That was very thought out. So Dr. Rudd discovered that on the coroner's computer, other than the JPEG images, there were these completely clear TIFF images. And the TIFF images showed this beautiful picture of Ben's skull, and there was no fracture. Then we got a forensic computer expert. We got the metadata, and you could see that someone had manipulated the images of the skull.
The TIFF images are the uncompressed raw digital images of Ben's skull, which were vital to exposing Dr. Choi's faulty opinion, but were not made available to the defense at trial. Since then, a forensic computer expert has proven that someone had to have exported the crystal clear TIFF images as JPEGs, opened them in a new program, and saved them at an even lower bit rate, rendering them useless to another pathologist who, with them, could have shown that there was no through-and-through fracture, but rather that there were accessory sutures as well as a rebleed of a previous injury.
They knew they'd pressured the pathologist. I mean, it was so extreme when Dr. Rudd came along years later. Dr. Choi changed the death certificate to say it wasn't a homicide. So the death certificate now does not say it was a homicide. It says it was undetermined.
That's fucking real. Like, she's in prison for something that was not a homicide.
So with all of that, we came back to Lake County to the trial judge. The judge did everything to try to ignore the new images that we discovered. He accused our computer expert of manipulating the data. Nancy Jones became critically ill with cancer. She died about a month after the hearing. She was too ill to come in and testify. So we brought in Dr. Zimmerman, and he was head of a national trauma abuse council in the United States, probably the leading expert in the country, radiologist, in detecting skull fractures that were the result of an intentional act. He testified there wasn't a skull fracture. There would never be a skull fracture. The TIFF images were clear there was no skull fracture, and that the confession, this thing with the little teddy bear being thrown down on his face, did not match the physical evidence. Did not match. Well, the judge just thought he had a better understanding of the medicine and the radiology than Dr. Zimmerman, so he just wasn't going to consider his testimony. So back we go to the appellate court. Now, the judge couldn't get around the fact that Melissa had confessed, and then she thought it was a battle of the experts. They affirmed it. So then we come back again. New state's attorney takes over. He indicates he wants to meet with us, that they have serious questions about Melissa's conviction based on the computer evidence we presented. I hire Saul Kassin, who looks at the confession.
Of course, Saul Kassin is one of the foremost experts in the world on false confessions.
Saul Kassin had tracked the case for years, so he thought it was appalling. And then I hired the forensic psychiatrist from Yale. And we just started over. So the state recommended a computer forensic company and said they would be very comfortable with their findings. I had all the computer analysis redone. They concluded my expert was spot on, that the images had been manipulated. And they went even further and said they had been intentionally manipulated, that my expert in no way had altered any data. And they completely supported him. The experts from Yale have determined that the sexual assault should have been a major part of the trial. They've given me all of that information. And then, of course, I have Nancy Jones' affidavit, and I have an additional pathologist who's looked at, said, this was not a murder. This was not a murder. This was a child who had a severe head injury in October. That's why his head circumference increased so dramatically. This was not a murder. So in looking at it, we don't feel we'll get relief from the trial judge. It's the same trial judge. We have an action pending in federal court, but it's backlogged horribly. So we're going to go to Governor Pritzker with a clemency petition. I think that's our best avenue at this point.
The good news is you have one of the best governors, and I believe that he will give this the attention it deserves. There's only one conclusion you can draw. I mean, this entire case has collapsed like a house of cards. It's there's nothing there. It's insane. So is there a call to action?
I would encourage everyone to read our petition. I will post it on our website, KathleenTZellner.com. There'll be contact information in there for Governor Pritzker. If people feel persuaded by it and feel there's been a miscarriage of justice, I would strongly encourage them to write directly to him. I think it would be enormously helpful.
Great. We will put links in the episode description. And with that, we're going to turn to closing arguments, my favorite part of every episode, which is where I have the honor to thank each of you for joining us here on the show. And then I'm going to kick back in my chair, turn my microphone off, leave my headphones on, close my eyes, and just listen to anything else you want to share with me and our wonderful audience.
So I would say to the audience that The way I imagine and think about this case is I feel as if I'm fighting for my daughter's life, who's about the same age as Melissa. I believe in the history of the cases I've had 23 wrongful convictions resolved, that this is probably the worst one, and it's hard to measure things, but I think it's because Melissa is probably one of the best people I've ever met in my life. She is a purely good person, and I think anyone that looks at this case should be outraged by the manipulation of the evidence to convict this poor young girl of the murder of a child, and the damage that's been done to her mentally having to cope with this is indescribable. And so it doesn't matter what I have to do. It does not matter how long this battle takes. We are not going to stop this battle. We are going to keep pounding on the doors of justice till someone opens them.
If people are out there that know of my case, there's still time to do support letters on my behalf and basically just pray for me and my family and the other family as well. With the supporters that I hear from, it gives me strength and it helps me to stay strong. So just hearing from people through my family and then telling me and others, it's just very helpful. The support is just very uplifting for me. I just hope and pray that everything goes well, and I thank everybody so much from the bottom of my heart of hearing this and hearing my story and seeing that I am innocent and they wrongfully convict me. And I'm just grateful for people that reach out. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
Do, 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 do. We all know what that music means. It's time for the Olympics in Paris.
I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast. Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. and listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You may know Jackson Pollock, the painter famous for his iconic drip paintings. But what do you know about his wife, artist Lee Krasner? On Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock, the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting, just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
My kids like this podcast so much. It helps them focus at school, and they learn so much from it.
I am a kid, and me and my little brother listen to it every night before bed.
I love Lingo Kids! Yeah. Yes, I'm 8 years old, and I don't care. I still love it.
Parents, our podcast is here to capture imaginations, spark curiosity, inspire new ideas, and even help with bedtime routines. Enjoy it with your kid. Listen to Lingo Kids Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Check out our recent episode with Bachelorette Hannah Brown, all about growing up and chasing her dreams.
It's great to be a healed Hannah. I sometimes miss the chaotic, but it feels better in this body to feel more centered and grounded and working on that daily.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.